Good afternoon. Madam Co-Chair, it's habit. Good afternoon. We're going to open the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is February 9th, 2015. We're in hearing room 170. And we are going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 5502, Department of Administrative Services. Paul, if it's all right, I'm going to turn to you first to get us kick-started.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just note that under the meeting materials for today, there are a number of items, one of which is the LFO subcommittee presentation. LFO does a short summary of some of the issues, what the agency does, and then provide some copies of budget notes from last session. There's also the DAS Ways and Means presentation, and you'll find the appendix, and then a copy, electronic copy of the budget binder is also on this meeting date. We'll be leaving the budget binder and the appendix on the first day, so if you want to reference those at future meetings, please just look at the first day of the hearing, just to save copying of big documents over and over on each of the days. And with that, Mr. Chair, that's all I have.
Perfect.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I didn't do this morning or last week, but since this is the first time Mr. Siebert's in front of us, maybe it would be good if we as chairs remember that it'd be nice to introduce who our staff is to our new members.
Okay. So I guess that's a cue.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Siebert, Legislative Fiscal Office. I've been with the Legislative Fiscal Office since 98 and doing budgets since 2002. I've had the DAS budget. This is the second session I've had the DAS budget. They're my newest assignment.
There we go.
Very helpful. I didn't know how long you've been doing DAS.
All righty. So we're going to ask Director Jordan and Deputy Director Pack to come on up. Is there anyone else you'd... You're welcome. Come on up. Yep. So what we'll do is we'll turn this over to you and let you run with it.
Appreciate that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name's Michael Jordan. I'm the director at the Department of Administrative Services. I'm also the chief operating officer for the governor. Really appreciate the opportunity to present DAS's budget. We'll be here, I believe, for 7 days. That's one less than last year, so we're making progress. But I also realize that the committee is a combination of folks who've been here for some time and folks who are brand new to this committee. And so we'll be trying to fly at an elevation that's somewhere at the relatively high level for this presentation, doing an overview of everything we do. But obviously, at the chair's discretion, we're willing to stop anytime, answer questions, and so please feel free. Also, as was our commitment last session, or I should say 2 years ago, for questions that we can't answer today, our commitment is to get you an answer before your next session, which is tomorrow, or we'll have a date certain when we will have you an answer to your questions. So with that, Barry and I will act as your cruise directors and over the next few days, and we will have some special guest stars along the way.
So share with me really quick, Mr. Jordan, how would you like questions asked? Would you like them as they come up, or would you like us to hold them and do them all at once? What's best for you?
Well, certainly at your discretion, Mr. Chairman. I would say it's always a little easier when it's a bit conversational. We've got 50 slides, I think, to go through here today in less than an hour and a half now. And okay. So if it's a burning question, at your discretion, we're happy to interact. Also at your discretion about when we're losing time and need to keep moving. So
perfect.
That's fine with us, Mr. Chairman.
Perfect.
Let's all right. Begin. Great. So here's the overview of the 7 days real quickly. Today we're going to talk about how the Department of Administrative Services interacts with the entire executive branch, the enterprise as we refer to it. And also we have organized the agency into two sides. You'll hear us say the policy side and the service side. We're going to go through the service side of the organization today. And as you can see, in the future we've got the service sides for the next 2 days after today. On day four, We talked a lot 2 years ago about some changes we needed to make and some progress we needed to make on certain issues. We'd like to come back and update you on a number of initiatives that we've been working on over the last 2 years and how they're going. I don't think it's any secret to anybody that over the last year or two, the state has had some rather high-profile IT challenges, and we'd like to talk to you on day five, as we say, all IT, all day, all the time. We'd like to go through a number of the changes that we're making in the way the state both works on IT generally as a service, internal service, but also the way we interact on projects and the way we have put new processes in place regarding how we manage those. And then on day six, we have kind of a potpourri, if you will, of a lot of different things that the agency is engaged in right now and some things we see coming at us in the future. And then we'll do public testimony, hopefully wrap on day seven. So, to DAS. We are, at our heart, implementers. It's our job to take the state, the governor, and the legislature's policy direction and try to make it happen on the ground in Oregon's communities. That's the heart of our job. We do that. We're in a unique position as an agency because we serve most all agencies in state government at some level. We're in a unique position to convene and to lead state agencies when particularly there are conflicts or decisions that need to be made around approach. Speaking of approach, we have changed pretty dramatically over the last few years and put some systems in place to interact and engage with our customers. It's really important to us, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. And then lastly, to the degree that we can put more efficiency around internal service delivery, some would say indirect cost, that's more dollars that can get to Oregonians in direct service delivery, no matter what policy you may be thinking about. So our goals, we on the policy side of the House, our job is to make operational policy. I want to make that very clear. We're not in the policy-making business. That's your job. Our job is to set standards and policy for the operation of state government in many ways. We also want to, again, and you'll hear this word from me a lot, engage with state agencies in the making of that. And we have some mechanisms in place that I'll talk about in a few minutes. Regarding this division on policy, we want to coordinate between disciplines. There are times when folks who are working in a vacuum, for instance, on IT security policy, but aren't aware of the finance policies involved and how that works in different agencies, can come into conflict with each other. And so we set this up to be much more coordinated between disciplines regarding the making of operational policy. On the service side, it's really all about providing the appropriate level of service at the appropriate cost.
Mr. Chair, I was out of the room when you set the ground rules for questions.
Please go ahead.
The piece that I want to talk about is the coordination between agencies and how you effectuate that, because you've got a lot of agencies. It's been my experience in doing constituent work. They don't always talk to each other, much less coordinate. Could you talk about what are the venues in which you either share policy direction, operational, not policy, but talk about that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, if you'll be patient with me, we're going to get to it today. And then in subsequent days, we'll go into great depth in some of those areas.
Cool. So, that's fine. Thanks.
Thank you. And then lastly, agency-wide, we have certainly come to a realization in the last few years, and most people have, that we have an incredible challenge and an incredible opportunity in human resources. Our job is to have the most knowledgeable, skilled human resource that we can, obviously, at DAS, but fully a third of our workforce is eligible to retire today.
A third. Thank you.
And that's a general number. It ranges anywhere from 40% in some agencies to 30 in others, but generally speaking, about a third is eligible. That doesn't mean they'll all retire tomorrow, but they're eligible today. It presents a challenge, but also a huge opportunity for us. We also know that our capabilities have got to change going forward. And so it really is incumbent on us to hire the right kinds of skill sets and experiences going forward to match what we see the challenges to be, but also developing workforce development programs to be able to enhance the current workforce. And how do we do this? So strategy-wise, and this you're going to hear this till the cows come home, our overarching strategy in how we do business is engagement. We have to engage with agencies on the policy level to make sure that they accommodate, in some cases, a wide variety of stresses on agencies and how they operate, and do that to the best we can. Also, though, providing a standard that people have to operate to. And the best way to do that, we believe, is engaging with agencies. And again, I'll get to Senator's question soon. On the service side, it's about customers and choice and offering them the opportunity to think about service levels and cost as it matches their particular situation. And we have another group that, again, I'll mention in the future in great, much greater depth, called customer boards that we've chartered to do that on the service side. And then as far as agency-wide strategy, it's really continuous improvement. We have developed and put in place a management framework. We have quarterly target reviews on all of our operations. We have data targets to hit for those operations, and through that process we develop change projects to help get better. But it's really about continuous improvement for us. So let me talk just briefly about this split in the agency that I've referred to a couple of different times. About 2.5 years ago, we reorganized the agency. Prior to the reorganization, the disciplinary groups, whether it was HR or IT or procurement or finance, existed both at the policy setting level and the service level in the same organization, okay, same management group, dealt with those things. We were having real difficulties in having the policy folks not only be able to lift their head up high enough to look into the future and think about the broad nature of operational policy for a changing organization, but also being the accountability people, being the cops, if you will, over agencies and how they operate. Coupling that tension with providing great customer service to our customers. That was a real challenge for us, along with the other things in coordination that I'd mentioned earlier. And so, and then I'll just parenthetically mention the last thing. I was new. Our relationships with customers and the legislature were not good. And in my view, it was a near emergency situation. I needed to get every single employee, all 750 of them at the time, I needed to get their attention all at once. And so one of the ways to do that is really shake up their world. And we reorganized the entire agency, got everybody's attention, and we believe stopped some of the bleeding that we were doing, and quite frankly, more than that, turned the agency's relationships with its customers around. And we'll go into that in a little greater depth. So the split on the policy side, what they're really trying to do, take an enterprise-wide view, think about all the agencies and what we're trying to accomplish together, take a longer-term view, not be so caught up in the day-to-day, but to look into the future and try to see what's coming at us. And then aligning agency effort, trying to figure out where are the dissonances between program operation when we're trying to get to a certain outcome out on the ground, and how can we reconcile those things?
So, Marco, yes? Really quick, you've got 8 boxes here. Yep. I think I can identify what 6 of the 8
okay.
mean.
Which ones can I help you with?
Why don't we, for the entire committee, if
sure.
you could just identify
sure.
each of those.
On the policy side, Chief Financial Office, Chief Human Resource Office, Chief Information Office, Chief Operating Office. On the service side, Enterprise Asset Management, deal with cars and buildings and hard stuff. Enterprise Goods and Services, Finance, Accounting, Risk, etc., Procurement, EHRS, Direct HR Service to Agencies, Client Agencies, and ETS, Enterprise Technology Services, Direct IT Service to Agencies.
Senator.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't have done as well as you did. And so what I would respectfully ask, Mr. Jordan, could you reproduce this and send it to the professional staff and they send it to us? with the little blurb about the functions and who the manager is. You've instituted a fair amount of change over there, and it is difficult to know kind of who's on first anymore.
That'd be excellent.
Mr. Yeah. Chairman, thank Senator, you. Absolutely. No problem. We'll get that to you. And then I mentioned the policy coordination between these different policy groups on the policy side, making sure HR policy meshes with finance policy, et cetera, et cetera. We lodge the accountability, the COP role in this side. These are the folks when there's a tension between what an agency wants to do and what our policies are. It's our job to reconcile that on our side of the house. And then, again, being more intentional about policy, both from a coordination perspective, but also that long-term look to try and avoid unintended consequences. So that's the side of the house we're going to talk about in more depth in our presentation today. Tomorrow and the next day, we'll talk about the service side, but just very briefly, again, as I mentioned before, engage with customers about service levels and price. Focus on value, high-value customer service. That's their job, not worry so much about the other issues, but really providing great service. Collaborate with other service providers. In most of the things we do, we're not the only service provider in state government. So, for instance, in fleet, there are a number of different fleet managers in state government in different agencies for various reasons. It's often our job to convene those folks and determine how best we can serve across multiple service providers. And then lastly, an early warning system to the policy side. When a policy's not working multiple times, there seems to be a pattern on the ground that they're experiencing day to day, their job to be the early warning system to say, you got to look at this policy because it's not working for us in multiple ways. So that's really the division between the groups. And now I'm going to ask Barry to walk through a couple of the policy side offices, and I'll come back with the Chief Information Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Barry Pack, Deputy Chief Operating Officer with the Department of Administrative Services. And Michael and I are going to hand back and forth throughout our time with you so you don't get too bored listening to one or the other of us. I'm going to walk you through the policy offices, at least the first two, before I hand back to Mr. Jordan. We will also see, hopefully, less acronyms on the slides ahead, so you'll begin to get the real words in your head. In the policy side, as Michael said, there are four chief offices. All of these offices have statutory authority designated to an individual person who heads up that area. So in the chief financial office, we have the chief financial officer for the state. We have a chief human resource officer. We have a chief information officer. And we have a chief operating officer, although statutorily you'll see all of the authority is assigned to the director of the department.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pack, mostly for the benefit of our new committee members, could you remind people about the intersection between, for example, the Human Resource Office in DAS versus human resources that are in certain larger agencies? Same thing for information. If it's more appropriate later in the presentation, that's fine too. If it's more appropriate now, great.
Mr. Chair, Chair Steiner-Hayward, I think we will touch on each of those as we get through each of these sections. Mm-hmm. But on a very high level, we provide statewide standards and best practices and accountability across the enterprise. Many large agencies have their own internal shops that provide HR services and information technology services. We don't provide service to those. We set standards and are resources for them.
Thank you.
Okay. A couple of quick overview pieces around those four offices. As Michael said earlier, one of the advantages of having those four offices lodged within the Department of Administrative Services is the ability to work very closely together and coordinate across disciplines. What might get contemplated in the world of information technology is best informed by the business practices that are required from HR policy and practice, for instance. And if they're not working closely in coordination, we get those silos that develop and we end up with policies that aren't working well. Principally, the job of the four leaders in each of these offices is to remove barriers to agencies. It's our job to make sure that they're following the rules, but that we help identify the problems and find solutions. And part of that is not always falling on a policy as the right way to find a solution. There are ways in which collaboration and coordination can often get to a better result. But when we do need to put policies in place, we want to make sure they're simple, understandable, and easy to follow. There's also, we've instituted more of a mindset that enforcing compliance isn't always the best way to get it. We could issue edicts from the executive building across the street to agencies all day long, and it won't necessarily mean that those are going to get followed. But if we can work collaboratively and involve agencies in the decision-making process, we're far more likely to earn compliance than just to enforce it. And then finally, it's the job of the four policy leaders to enforce and set standard best practices across the enterprise in their respective disciplines. Each of these offices are funded by assessments to state agencies. We'll talk over the next 2 days about the service enterprises, which are funded through a combination of assessment to agencies and fees for service.
So really quick, that's one area where I want to get a better understanding of that. Sandra,
me too.
Okay, so is there a way, Paul, that we could get our arms around this and help us better understand? We need a 101 on this. Would that be all right?
Sure. Sandra Johnson. Can I nuance what I want?
Please.
For the benefit of our new colleagues, these assessments to agencies are just, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I ran a state agency for 5 years, so this is an agency chair's view of it. It was DAS calling up and saying, we provide these great services. Here's how much you're going to pay us. Uh-huh. And it, in some cases, is just washed general fund. And so I'm quite curious about how you are trying to reduce costs to agencies and whether or not agencies have any vehicle to say that they're getting value for what they're being charged, because some of it is fee for service, some of it is assessment. For me, it's a distinction without a difference if I have DAS reaching into my agency budget stealing my money. And so I'm just trying to figure out how's that work, and where do I get to say, I'm not so sure that this is value added, but you're charging me for it. I also want to know, as you are implementing all of these changes, what does the trend line on the assessments look like? Because I have a sneaking suspicion that it looks like that.
Madam Co-Chair. Excuse me, did you want to respond?
Feel free. I mean, if I'm all screwed up, correct me on the record.
Well,
just remember, I'm voting on your budget later.
Senator Johnson, we do not allow coercion on this committee.
What I love about this place is there's always a frame that you get to work within. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Johnson, I guess to try and be succinct, we'd be happy to work with Mr. Siebert regarding how assessments work for everybody, trend lines over time, however, whatever way that we can work together to get the information that you're looking for.
Thank you.
That's perfect.
It's complex in some cases, and it's different from division to division, but we can work on that and try and get you some succinct information about how that works.
Great. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the other piece that I would ask for, Mr. Pack was inordinately helpful to me and others in staffing the Senate Bill 450 task force. And one of the things that became clear there was that there was an enormous amount of the government equivalent of urban myth. And that related more to information sharing in that particular case. But I'm really interested in this issue about dissemination of best practices and an ongoing process of clarifying understanding of what the policy actually is. So I'm really interested to hear at some point, if it's appropriate, how you guys manage to do that, given the diffuse nature of the agencies and how some things apply to some agencies and not to others. So that's one of the things I'd love to see as well.
Thank you.
I guess I'm going to elaborate just very quickly. So I'm looking at the four chiefs. On my slide, it's in quotes. So we've got our chief financial office, we've got our chief human resource office, our chief information office, our chief operating office. I guess elaborating on my earlier question, what assessment is charged by each one of those silos or chiefs, as you've defined them? And again, back now following on Senator Johnson's questions, how do the agencies know they're getting the value for that assessment? How do you measure that? Thank you. And I'm going to work with Paul on that to make sure I'm asking the right questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so just to make sure I understand, you'd like some information for each of the offices of how they're funded, mm-hmm. the structure of the assessment, whether it's FTE-based, FTE in budget, whatever it might be. whether it's service-based, I presume you'd like a list, price list of maybe of services, and then some information over the last three biennia, including the fourth would be the current proposed governor's budget of how those assessments have changed over time, just in total, rather than each individual one, like the total amount raised.
That's what I'd like. Senators, we're all on the same page.
I'd like what he said, plus the part that I asked for, which is a little bit different, which is how the dissemination of the policy and the best practices and standardization so that we don't have one agency saying, well, this is how we do it, and another one saying, well, that's how we do it.
We all good?
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
So I'm going to walk you through a little bit of detail on the Chief Financial Office, and we'll obviously be getting you more information. But within that office, you'll see there are five sort of program units: the Budget and Budget Policy Unit, Strategic Audit, Statewide Audit and Budget Reporting, Procurement Policy, Capital Planning and Finance, and Statewide Accounting and Reporting. Budget Policy and Budget Reporting and the Statewide Audit functions are principally involved in preparing the budget that the governor provides to the legislature at the start of each session, for helping agencies develop their budget requests within that budget, responding to the LFO requests and instructions around how to prepare presentations and the budgets for the legislature, which will eventually approve. They also oversee the management and expenditures of some of those agency funds and work with agencies who may have difficulties emerging in partnership with the Legislative Fiscal Office for how best to approach those and the potential of any e-board requests that might be coming in. Procurement policy sets the broad policy implementing the state's rather complicated procurement rules. This is for agencies that are subject to DAS procurement policy. There are agencies that are not. Capital planning and financing manages much of the state's bonded indebtedness along with the state treasury. And statewide accounting and reporting helps agencies accurately account for and report their finances. A couple of drivers in the CFO budget, and again, you'll see that in the assessments as we get you more information. The principal driver is really the increasing request for information and data to help drive better decision making, both by agency leadership and the governor and the legislature. As we are working to build more data, more reliable data systems into the work we do and tie that to key budget and program decisions, it just creates more work. You get a better outcome, but it creates more work. So we have a couple of requests for some additional resource to meet up with increasing workload. One key initiative that's underway within the Chief Financial Office began 2 years ago with the legislature's budget authorizing $2 million for a capital long-range facility plan. 2 years ago, I don't think we could have sat here and confidently told you we really knew all of the assets the state owned in terms of physical property. There was no comprehensive list. There were lots of lists, but there was no one comprehensive list. And we began an effort to get that one comprehensive list in together and into a database so that we are confident we have it all in one place. And then to begin a facility condition assessment for those buildings.
Senator Johnson.
I think Mr. Pack is getting to my question, not just what do we own, but where is it and what kind of shape is it in and what are the terms of the leases and what's the capital maintenance program or not, rates so that you can see whether you're getting a good deal or not. Has that work been concluded and is that report available?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that work is ongoing. We have made significant progress, and we will be reporting to you on that during our time with you today, some of it today and some of it the rest of this week.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I would like the report underneath it, not just your verbal report, but I'd like to see what you've got to this point.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, there's no report as such, but there's lots of data. So we will work with Mr. Siebert to figure out what we can get you that's not just our presentation to you, but is the underlying meat of the issue.
Let me be a little clearer. Yes. I feel like this is bring me a rock, bring me another rock. I want to be clear about what I know, I mean what I want. At this point, you should know what the portfolio is, right?
Yes.
Maybe not the condition.
We have concluded the condition assessment on the first phase of the properties, and I can get you details on how many properties and all of that.
First phase was DAS, OYA, and OLCC. So DAS, of course, owns a lot of buildings.
DAS-owned buildings.
OYE facilities and OLCC facilities. That's the first phase of the assessment. We have an inventory, I believe, of all of them. But we're beginning to do the assessment of condition so that we can project capital need over time.
Okay. Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will this compilation of real estate include the Department of Transportation's stuff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I believe the entire list includes the Department of Transportation. I can't tell you when the last time the Department of Transportation's list was updated. We have a list, I know that. But we have a list of all state property. We've been focusing on, as I said, DAS, OIA, OLCC, but we have a list, an inventory of all the properties. And if I'm
thank you.
Sorry.
Follow up. I have a list too, and it's about that thick.
It is thick,
and
yes.
It doesn't tell me a whole lot of anything other than not even where it is. Mm-hmm. So, when does DAS anticipate delving into the Department of Transportation property?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I'm going to have to get back to you to know when we would get to all of the Department of Transportation, or even if we had anticipated doing that.
Please.
The genesis of the question is the Department of Transportation's budget appears to be in somewhat disarray, and identifying some tradable real estate and buildings might be of value to balancing that budget.
I appreciate that.
So I guess just one comment I would share is, to me, it seems like a fundamental function of the Department of Administrative Services is to know what assets we have, in what condition, what's their useful life, et cetera. And I guess this is just a conversation we're going to need to continue to have. And I know this work's been going on in the interim. I served on that committee where we had this conversation. But to me, it really does seem as if this committee needs to highlight the need to advance this conversation. To me, it's a fundamental function.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I couldn't agree more. It's the reason we're doing the project. 2 years ago, when we were before you, we knew nothing, about the condition of our buildings and all of the places we were. So we started with the inventory. We're working our way through the condition of these buildings, all in service to developing a capital renewal and replacement plan so that we will be able to know when those big expenditures, when the HVAC system at the L&I building's got to be replaced. When
will I would it think if we did it correctly, there'd be tremendous savings that could be had to the state of Oregon.
We would at least be able to make it predictable. We could equalize those payments over time. We could incorporate those appropriately into things like uniform rent so that we wouldn't run into these spikes as much as we do.
Right.
So those are the really big issues for us, the predictability of it. Also, the packaging of contracts. So if we knew we had 7 roofs to do in one summer and we package that contract, we get a better deal than if we were we're doing one-offs, all over the place. So okay. It's the predictability of it that would really help us.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. In addition to the inventory and the condition, I think it would also be really valuable to know, is it in use or not in use?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what is the, some estimation of the value of the ownership of that asset to the people of Oregon and whether we should continue to own it or not?
Mr. Cochet, Senator Whitsitt, one of the components of the analysis we're doing is the employee footprint in each building. So we actually know how many employees are on which floors of our buildings. One of the issues we're working on is to change our space standards so that we're more dense over time as we move people, as we remodel, as we change occupancy in our buildings. What density of employee per square foot or square feet per employee should we be striving for? And so we're looking to change the density to be more dense and save space ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Jim, also, the state owns a significant amount of property. And I was thinking again of the Department of Transportation in that they have either promulgating rules or perhaps are bringing in a LC. But to give them authority to exclude the people from various different properties, supposedly for public safety and so forth. And when you start looking, which properties are those? Why are people being excluded? What value are they to the people if they're excluded? Why do we know? I mean, I think that's something we're getting back to. What do we own and why do we own it?
I understand.
Madam Co-Chair.
Well, just quickly, I want to understand. You mentioned very earlier that when you came in 4 years ago, Mr. Jordan, that there were challenges. And it strikes me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is emblematic of the kinds of challenge. I'm not trying to say that I disagree with any of my colleagues. I do. But I want to understand whether this is, you're showing this us as part of the stuff you're trying to do to get this place back into shape, that you would, I mean, I'm not trying to sound like I'm being your shill here, but am I right in believing that this is where you're headed with this, to try to get this under control?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator.
Really quick, Madam Co-Chair, they've done great work in the interim
yeah.
of this.
Yeah,
you
no,
folks
it's
really
obvious.
Have.
I mean, because I remember yeah. where you were 2 years ago, and we were just tearing our hair out looking at this, saying, what do you mean you can't tell yeah. us any of this stuff?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Steiner, Hayward, exactly. This function did not exist at DAS. 2 years ago, we had no long-range facility planning function, and it is staggering to believe that, but it's true, and so I think we've made good progress in 2 years. We have a ways to go. There's no question about it.
So I'm going to ask. We're going to hold our questions a little bit and let you continue because you really need to get through 50 some odd slides yeah. today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I may just suggest to you, perhaps we'll talk with Mr. Siebert in the future, that the folks who are doing this facility inventorying and the condition assessment are really remarkable professionals, and they have a lot of information they could share to this committee perhaps at a future opportunity, since there's a lot of interest in that topic. But I'm going to move on quickly. The packages that are in the Chief Financial Office about the work we've just discussed. 4 years ago, LFO and the Chief Financial Office worked together to streamline our budget process, and in anticipation of some of that efficiency, we took a reduction of 2 FTE in that unit, and after having gone through a couple cycles with that, we've recognized that the workload isn't quite as reduced as we had hoped it might be, and there are pressures on that unit, so there's a request to restore one of those positions. Also increasing demands in the capital bonding program could use some additional support, and then there's another $2 million request to continue the capital facility planning work that we've just been discussing. In the Chief Human Resource Office, you'll see again a number of work units, HR policy, which develops and administers the policies regarding human resources across the state. Executive recruitment does high-level recruiting for agencies. We're talking mostly agency directors and board and commission executive directors. Classification and compensation manages the state's, obviously, the classification system and the compensation plan for almost 40,000 employees. And we will talk with you later about some work that's happening in that arena. Workforce Development Unit is a cooperative effort within agencies to identify strategies around workforce planning. As Michael mentioned, with a third of our workforce retirement eligible, we're trying to partner with our agencies to find ways to do some succession planning, to do some skill investment and development to be prepared. And then Labor Relations obviously manages the collective bargaining on behalf of the executive branch. Right now we've got 31 collective bargaining agreements that cover about 27,000 state employees, represented by 10 different labor unions or labor organizations, and then there's also an SEIU bargaining unit of 12,000 home care workers. This is just a quick depiction of that workforce life cycle that I had mentioned earlier. Really, again, it's about trying to find the right people in the right jobs at the right time, helping move those employees into onboarding, managing performance, retention strategies, and succession planning, doing the organizational development work, and then eventually exiting employees out, planning again for the next phase. It's a continual cycle, and the role the Chief Human Resource Office plays and the staff there are consultants, advisors, really trying to be strategic business partners to agencies as they plan for this within their own workforce. The next slide is just another example of one of the values that I think is represented by having an office that's dedicated to looking out across the enterprise as it relates to HR policy. And that comes in the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And regardless of anyone's individual position on what that law actually was, it changed requirements for employers, including the state. And we wanted to make sure we had our arms around what that meant for the state. And for the state as an employer, it was really around our temporary employees, how much they worked, and whether or not they would then follow under various benefit requirements within the law. So Oregon was actually in the forefront of trying to figure out some of these questions. There were some ambiguities in the definition of temporary employees, particularly as it related to state agencies and how we have various structures for our state agencies and whether they applied or didn't apply. And so working together with the various agencies listed up there that are involved, and I can go through the acronyms if you'd like, we were able to identify clearly with the guidance of the Department of Justice what the impact was to the state, forecast the number of employees that might be impacted, the amount of cost that would be increased to agencies based on the number of employees who wanted insurance, and then implemented that policy, contacted the employees during open enrollment, and we've moved forward. Three packages here again, and these are all about strengthening some of those processes we've talked about. Package 109 is helping to evaluate our business processes in HR. One of the things you'll hear us talk about a Hackett report, a Hackett group study that we did a couple of years ago, which was a baseline study of our administrative procedures. One of the things we learned in that was that our HR systems are incredibly manual and paper-based. We don't leverage technology in a way to make those efficient, and everything's very paper-based. And we'll be talking with you later about replacing our HR information system. But in order to be able to do that effectively, we also have to change our business process. We can't just keep doing things the way we've always done them.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator.
I'm sitting here having this enormous deja vu flashback. I've done this agency's budget since I came to the legislature. And I guess what I'm struggling with is I've sat here and heard exactly the same presentation. We've got to fix HR. We've got to know what our inventory is. How durable is the work that you're doing now so that a decade from now, a Michael Jordan-like creature is not sitting here having this same Groundhog Day conversation?
I don't think there's anybody quite like Mr. Jordan, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, if I had to answer that succinctly, I would say it's approach. The approach to the work. I firmly believe that we will never get this organization to change in any of our business processes by issuing policy from the fifth floor of DAS West in the executive building. You have to engage with the people who have to live with the policy and live with it over time, and they have to be the ones that agree we need to change. We have a problem, and we need to fix it. My job isn't to issue policy. It's to keep them in a room until they define the problem and the solution and then adopt it themselves. And we'll talk about enterprise leadership team. We'll talk about all the things that manifest that strategy of engagement. But if you want sustainable change over time, you've got to engage the people you're changing. And that's what we're trying to do.
Well, Mr. Chair, but with one-third of them eligible for retirement, you know, they're going to cycle out of here and the next bunch come. And I'm just trying to figure out, how do you make this have some degree of institutionalization so that we don't just keep having this same circular conversation over and over and over again? And I understand what you're saying, but there are going to be some agency managers that are still here when you're gone. And how do you institutionalize it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, I'm well aware of the Weebies. In the organization. They used to have it written on their forehead as I would speak to them the first 6 months I was here. So to institutionalization, A, it's engagement, but B, then it's actually putting in the policies in place. And I would submit to you that we're not having the same discussion today that we had 2 years ago.
Oh, and I would readily agree with
that. If you wanted another word for where we're headed, it's maturing the organization. It's a maturation process. And quite frankly, it's a Maslow's hierarchy. 4 years ago, we were wandering for shelter and food. we're headed to self-actualization, but I think it's probably about a decade process. So I would submit that we'll talk about the same topics from 2 years to 2 years to 2 years. My hope is that we're more mature and our conversation is at a higher level over time.
Chair.
Yeah, Representative.
Thank you for coming and presenting this. It's very informative. I guess what I'm wondering is, I've scrolled through all of this and I'm not seeing any timelines, any deadlines for certain types of implementation. And I was just wondering if that's something that will be presented later. I went through the whole presentation. So I think maybe that could help if we had some sense of what the timelines were or deadlines that we could hold some folks accountable to. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Taylor, we certainly have timelines. The way we do change is we tend to formulate our change processes into projects that have beginnings and ends and resources and schedules and scopes, and we charter those projects. We've done about 18 to 20 of them over the past 2 years. We've closed about 10 of them, about 10 are in flight. And we've changed those processes. So each change process we go through, whether it's payroll or it's timekeeping or it's email or whatever it happens to be, our commitment is to deliver on those changes and instantiate them in how we do business. So we will take a day to go over those projects in the seven that were with you.
Okay, follow up. Just to clarify, so are deadlines given to managers or for projects that we would like to see XYZ implemented in 90 days, and on this day they're to report back to you and say this is what it is and has to be an explanation for why it is it wasn't completed? Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Okay. Representative Taylor.
Thank you.
Let's continue.
I'm going to move us along and hand it back to Mr. Jordan. Sorry.
Okay. My job is to talk a little bit about the CIO's office. As I said before, this is probably the area of state government that is in the highest level of flux overall. I'm not going to talk about all of those things today because we've got a whole day scheduled with you on day five for IT and all the things going on in state government. I'm going to focus on this office in our shop right now. You can see from the slide three major categories of work for them. I should mention before I go much further, especially for new members, the state CIO's office was memorialized in statute 2 years ago.
I just want to let you know we're not abandoning you, but both Representative Taylor and I have a bill that we're chief sponsoring together, so we'll be back. We didn't want to think that we didn't like you.
I would never think that, Senator.
If I left, though.
That's a different message.
Not so much.
Caution.
And with that.
And with that. So 2 years ago in the 13th session, there was a bill to put the state CIO's office in statute, define its roles and responsibilities and authorities. Also, it became a direct appointment by the governor. So the CIO now has most all of the authority that used to rest with the director of the Department of Administrative Services regarding the administration of IT generally in state government. It really breaks down into a couple of big areas. One is how we plan for the future. For the state CIO, he's looking enterprise-wide and trying to plan across a number of different disciplines. And how do we invest? Where should the money be spent in those areas? Some will recall that a year ago in February, we came before you regarding a substantial shortfall in infrastructure, the really hardware at the state data center. And we had not planned well enough, I would submit, for the long-term future regarding the renewal of that infrastructure.
So let me ask a question. What influence does the Chief Information Office have on a department that wants to undertake a new IT project? Let's take the Oregon Department of Revenue. What influence does the CIO have with or over or whatever it is with the director of the Department of Revenue?
Perhaps I could skip ahead and talk to you just a bit about it. So 2 years ago, we had no way to even make a bad decision in state government regarding IT at the enterprise scale. We have created an IT governance structure, and we are now actuating that structure with staffing on the ground. What this slide illustrates is the relationship between the state CIO and his office in two ways on a project, okay? Project starts usually as an idea or a challenge inside of an agency. Most agencies have some form of IT governance themselves, also, although very small ones don't. We are proposing in this budget that we fully fund what we are calling strategic technology offices. We have piloted those kind of internally with shared staff this biennium. We'd like to fully flesh out that across all of state government, and we'll talk more about that as we go. Those strategic technology officers report directly to the state CIO. Their job is to engage with the agency before it's a project on what their real problem is. So usually it's a business process problem. And quite often we reach for technology before we even understand what the business problem is. And these folks' job is to work with the agency to clearly identify the problem. In other words, consult with them. You see that box. And then the state CIO has put what we call a stage gate process in place, working collaboratively with Legislative Fiscal Office to create one rigorous process that will deliver more reliably on state IT projects. And the stage gate process in along with which is operated by the state CIO, and agencies must go through this to get approval for their projects. And that it is an incremental delivery process. So let's make it analogous to a road construction project. You would need pre-engineering, right? And you'd get a little bit of money for that. And then you'd need detailed engineering, and you'd go from 50% contingency to 15% contingency. And you'd ultimately do a contract, and you'd negotiate a contract, and then you'd get money for construction. So we're attempting to take an incremental delivery approach with a much more rigorous review at different stages for all state IT projects. So
this process is now in place?
It is now in place.
When did we begin implementing this process?
In the last few months.
Okay.
It's taken a while to design. I didn't mention to the committee, we have a new state CIO. He was hired about a year ago, January in 14. He will tell you it was one of the worst onboarding processes he's ever had, because 3 weeks after we got him here, we sent him to cover Oregon for about 6 or 8 months to try and see what was really going on there.
And he's still with you?
And he came back. And he came back. He's very happy to do this kind of work and try to help us change the way we do business. But this is the specific answer to your question. And then ultimately, at the end, it says manage. We will ultimately take those projects, and they will be categorized, whether they apply to a single agency. They'll be managed and transparent to all of the IT governance players in that. Some of those projects will elevate to shared service. So let's take licensing, for instance. We have a lot of agencies that do licensing. Mm-hmm. If we're going to put a new licensing program in one of those agencies, we need to be thinking about collaborating as a shared service across multiple agencies. And then ultimately, if it's an enterprise-wide project like HRIS, for instance, an HRIS system, which we'll talk more about later, that's an enterprise-wide piece. And we plan to track those and manage those through a portfolio tool that we've put in place. So that's some of the things we're doing.
Yeah, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My mind always drifts to the Department of Education, because that's what I do and love. But this piece about IT, so are you working with the department on their IT project that they've been working on for 10 years?
Well, I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman, Representative Comp, I'm not sure about 10 years. It's been 10. I can tell you that the state CIO, when he was brand new on the job before he went to cover Oregon, and I interjected ourselves into the longitudinal database project.
Right.
And said we weren't ready for an appropriation for that whole project. We needed to go through more refinement of the business case. So we reduced the ask and are putting more rigor to that business case before we move to the project itself. And I could go review the project further, but that's my last recollection. So
yes, we are working. Yeah, I just wanted to know whether you're working in collaboration with them.
Yes.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move back to the first box, consult.
Sure.
And when you mentioned that sometimes we have leaped right to designing and buying or building something, I'd like to paraphrase what I think this might mean, and I'd like you to correct me where I'm wrong. Sometimes someone says, well, this thing is broken, and to do exactly what we've done for the last 30 years, we want these fields of data to display on our computer screen this way, and then we want it to automatically send an email message. And this might mean someone would say, well, let's step back. What are you trying to accomplish? Did you need this automatic email message, and did you need to repeat those 50 fields of data? Are you still doing this process? Is there a different, what is the outcome intended to be? Is that what we're talking about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, absolutely. We have a mantra now, and that is that the business leads technology. Most of our problems in technology are business process issues. They're not technology. We don't know our business well enough and have defined it at a granular enough level to know what technology will make us better in many cases. But it's easier to do the RFP and leap to the technology solution than it is to change your business process, because that means changing people and changing culture. And we don't do that very well. We've got to get better at it. And you will see in the request for the CIO in his package 105, there is a substantial resource, human resource there in business process analysis rather than technology. Mm-hmm. It's a mix of both, but a substantial resource ask for business process analysis. That's where we really struggle.
Thank you.
You bet. So where do we want to go? Let's keep going forward.
We have 34 minutes.
Yeah. So I think what I already started to say, what I wanted to say, and that is the packages in the CIO's office that are before you. Package 105 is multiple staffing to try and build out that strategic technology officer structure to implement what we were just talking about and provide the kind of resources to agencies to make sure we do a much better job with preparing to do an IT project and, quite frankly, significantly reviewing our business processes. So that's a number of FTE there. 106 has to do with just really transferring the State Interoperability Executive Council from the Department of Transportation to DAS and what would be necessary to make that transition. We are not moving forward, package 107. That's because, and you saw on the organizational chart page, a geospatial box. That's a historic place for GIS services to be in DAS. We actually believe that's a service, not necessarily a policy function, and we should be and we are collaborating with a number of agencies to see how to consolidate that GIS function outside of DAS, because it's not really a DAS policy function. So we pulled the 107 package because we're not ready to tell you how to invest in that going forward.
I'll wrap this up with the Chief Operating Office, three principal work units, Office of Economic Analysis, which we'll talk about just in a minute, internal audit, which we'll get to at the end of our presentation when we start talking about status on audit findings, and then the statewide initiatives, which is a group of project managers who help deliver on the projects that we'll be talking about on day four. So we're gonna beg to skip those over for now, talk very briefly here about the Office of Economic Analysis. You know all of them. You know the Chief Economist, Mark McMullen. You rely on the forecast they put out to make your budgets. This is the schedule for the economic and revenue forecasts, which get all the attention, particularly the May forecast. So it tells you how much money you have to budget towards so you can go home and resume your lives. But they also do many other forecasts. They do short-term forecasts for the state. They do longer-term forecasts for the state and counties in terms of economy. And then they do prison and youth authority population forecasts as well.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator.
How does their prison and youth forecasting dovetail or complement or contradict the work of the Criminal Justice Commission? They do the same kinds of activities, or at least I thought they did.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, this is a position that's just housed in the department that does the forecasting. I think it was moved there a number of biennia ago to give it a sense of independence away from the Department of Corrections. But they work closely with the CJC and with law enforcement. I've been to one of their meetings where they get together after a session, look at all the legislation that's passed, talk to DAs and others in the area to try to look at the impacts of those and the effect of the prison
forecast. Thank you. You've answered my question. I was just trying to figure out whether this was duplicative.
No, it's a collaborative effort. Yeah.
And this office also coordinates the highway cost allocation study that is done every biennium. We have one package for the chief operating officer. That's to take three limited duration positions that were granted to us in the last budget and convert them to permanent positions. These are project managers in the statewide initiatives area, and we'll talk more about what those projects look like in a few days.
So we've talked quite a bit today about DAS and its relation.
And it's,
excuse me, Mr. Sure. Mr. Jordan, but sure. Looking through the budget, you've got about 178 new positions in your in the governor's budget, and we've only heard about five, I think.
We have. Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, we have 2 days ahead of you in the other divisions we have to go through. But one of the major changes is that we have proposed in the budget to bring the Office of Administrative Hearings over from employment to DAS. That's a significant portion of those over 100 positions in just that move. Those aren't new positions. We're relocating them from employment to our shop. That's the proposal anyway.
Yeah, I was aware of that, but then I don't believe there's anywhere near 178. And
No, but there's over 100 at the Oregon at the Office of Administrative Hearings.
And I don't know if this is the right time to discuss it, but as a chief operations officer, you are tasked with implementing the policy and the budgets of the state, and we've always based those policies and assumptions and budgets on gross domestic product. So, is there any? Has there been any recent changes, or do you anticipate any recent changes or any future changes on how those policies and budgets will be based?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, I'm not sure the relationship between the budget and gross domestic product. I know when we work to prepare the governor's proposed budget to the legislature, it's based predominantly on where we think sources of revenue and the levels of those revenues projected forward, both on a 2- and 10-year basis. We attempt to do that from the chief financial office.
Well, aren't all of the revenues that come to the state based on the ability of the state, the people of the state, to grow revenue?
Our revenues come from multiple sources, Senator.
We can discuss it further. Okay. Obviously, you prefer not to discuss it here, so we can discuss it further.
Let's continue.
Okay. So we've talked a lot today about DAS's relationship to the entire executive branch or the enterprise of state government as we talk about it. So I wanted to talk in a couple of ways and use some diagrams to let you know kind of how we see DAS and the chief operating office in relationship to the other parts, both within DAS and then externally. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how we've structurally done this approach or engagement with the rest of state government. So inside DAS, I act as the director of the Department of Administrative Services. Barry is the deputy COO. I have a deputy who is over the service side of the House, which we'll talk about over the next 2 days. But really, the crux for DAS internally, for our leadership and governance, comes in that box in the middle of the DAS executive team, which are really the administrators of those eight boxes you saw at the very beginning of our presentation, the divisions of DAS, divided into the two groups, the policy team and the service team. You will see on this slide something I want to make sure is clear. You see a little note with in the lines that go out to the enterprise leadership team and the customer boards called delegated authority. I want to make it clear to this body and everybody else that we are in no way delegating the statutory authority that lies with either my office as the director of Department of Administrative Services or the other offices that you saw, chief financial, HR, et cetera. We are not delegating those to others. It's meant to show that we have chartered those groups to be the venues on where we try to do collective action, whether it's with the enterprise leadership team, which I'll talk a little more about on a future slide, but within DAS, particularly as it pertains to service, we've chartered these customer boards. They have the authority within my okay to set the rates for the services DAS provides and to set the service levels by their charter. And they have done this for this proposed budget. This is the first cycle they've actually gone through the entire rate setting process. So the customers set the rates. The customers set the service levels through service level agreements.
I think I'm pretty clear on both these, but for some of our newer members, mm-hmm. would it be possible to just get us a little more information that explains both the leadership and Cubs.
Absolutely. We can bring charters and membership and all of those things to you.
Representative Nathan.
I've been able to participate in the Subcommittee on General Government for a lot of years. What you've just described is groundbreaking. I wanted to say it publicly, acknowledge it, and I think it's just quite amazing. It does take a while mm-hmm. to get to a point like this, but this is significant. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I think it goes back to the statement I made earlier about maturation. These boards have been up now for one cycle. They've gone through one cycle of making rates. We expect that as they mature, they'll actually start to talk more substantively about how those services are delivered across all of state government. And in fact, when we talk to you about technology in day five, one of the projects, which actually was generated by the ETS customer board, is about what we call utility services. In other words, services across all state to government that should just have one provider. And we're going through a process right now to deal with that. So it's that maturation of these folks that where the real value is going to be down the road, I think. So thank you for the comment.
And so I just following up on this, I would have to believe representatives, and let's talk about the Cubs, would be pretty forthright. Because those are potential resources coming out of their budgets.
Mr. Chairman, it has been an interesting exercise to watch. The learnings have occurred on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Not only have we learned a lot from our customers about their expectations and service issues and all of those kinds of things, and of course cost, but they've learned a lot from us about the complexities of supplying service across all of these agencies that are big and small and have capacity and no capacity, and the service delivery customer environment is also a learning for both. So it's been a really interesting process for both sides of the process.
Excellent.
If I may,
sure.
I think the other interesting thing to watch in both the enterprise leadership team and the customer utility boards is that we are asking the people who participate to take off their agency hat and put on an enterprise hat to think about the benefit of the whole state. That's hard to do when you're trained to watch out for your own agency and when you're watching a rate develop and thinking about the impact it's going to have on your particular agency budget. Not every vote was unanimous, but what they did do throughout the whole rate making process was come to a general consensus that not everyone's going to gain out of how we've set these rates, but that this is the best and most fair way we can do it.
So we have 21 minutes.
Let's do it.
I'm going to ask you to prioritize.
We're getting pretty close here, I think. So
really
wanted in just a few bullets, and I won't go over all of these, but the really, again, big deal is active engagement with all of the players across the enterprise to solve problems. All of these things are aspects of that. I think we are at different levels of maturity regarding the different bullets. I think we're starting to get much more customer focused, much more transparent. We're just beginning to be able to think long term versus short term, and that's a maturation process. Aligning management structures to achieve outcomes. We have yet to move down that road very far. But I think those are the kinds of questions that lie before us as we mature. We are an incredibly fragmented organization when it comes to management. We are 90 state agencies. We are 300 plus boards and commissions. 162, I believe, of those entities are legal entities in state statute. So it is an incredibly fragmented organization from a management perspective. As we mature and begin to engage in those conversations about how do we change, I think that's one that we have a long way to go on. So again, this shared leadership discussion, I think, is making a difference at different levels. We are being able to align better and resolve conflicts better between agencies and between programs. We've seen actually this biennium a sharing of resources. We certainly don't have all the resources we need inside DAS to do a lot of the projects, particularly when it comes to subject matter experts that have to get around the table and talk about these issues and how to change them. So agencies are now contributing human resource to these, and we're sharing those things to kind of get at these issues. Very briefly, this is meant to show kind of the exterior process to DAS, where we have convened the enterprise leadership team as governance. It consists of 20 agency heads across all the different policy areas and the deputies of the four statewide electeds. And basically what we've been doing for 4 years is practicing group leadership, shared leadership, and shared problem solving. And I have a couple of folks here that would like to talk to you about how that's changed things. They have two subcommittees that they've formed. One is the Improving Government Steering Team. Those are the people we'll talk about in day four. Thank you. They're the ones who actually run these projects, these change projects on the ground. They're made up of four members of ELT and four deputies or administrative services directors from agencies. They're the ones who really look at the nuts and bolts of processes and how we do business. They hold those projects accountable and getting things done. The newer one is IT governance, which has just been chartered by ELT to really run this whole IT thing from that engagement model across all of the agencies. They assist the state CIO in the making of policy, the planning for investments, et cetera. And when it's a big question that is going to affect everybody, they often kick it upstairs to ELT to chew on. So that's kind of the model. Again, I'll remind you, where it says delegated authority, it's really a model for engagement. We've chartered those folks. That's written down what they get to do, what they don't get to do. It does not take away any of the statutory authority that still lies with state CIO, my office as DAS director, et cetera, et cetera. With that, I probably should be quiet and maybe let a couple folks come up and be guest stars for a minute. And if that's okay with you, Mr.
Chairman. You bet. Who would you like to invite up first?
I think Katie Kola and Margaret Van Vliet are here to talk to you.
Wonderful.
Come on up, directors.
Your name's first. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Katie Koba, the director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And I wanted to just touch on you with you briefly on my experience with the Enterprise Leadership Team. I've been in state government for a long time now, and I've been an agency director for a long time now. And I just kind of wanted to share a perspective on how things have changed with the ELT model. I'm the director of the Department of Agriculture, and some of you I've met with on a fairly regular basis. And I can guarantee you that every one of those conversations have been, what is my agency doing about X? There's not a single one of you that have ever talked to me about my role as being one agency in the whole enterprise of state government. And so there is historically a tension between agencies and DAS. And are we decentralized? Are we centralized? How much direction should DAS be providing me as I manage my agency versus not? Who's paying for what services? What should be that level of payment and that level of service? Some of the questions that you already asked here in the last hour and a half and that you'll be asking over the course of time. And so we've struggled over time with how can DAS run better and what is its role versus the role of state agencies. About, 6-7 years ago, we had a great recession in the state. And even before that point in time, but I think certainly exacerbated by that recession, there's a public perception that there's a lot of waste in state government. And what are we doing to address that waste, to find it and eliminate it and be more streamlined and pushing on all of us? And I think really at that point in time, those of us that have been in state government for a while realized we couldn't keep doing things the way that we had been doing them. We're not getting any more resources. The demand on the services that we provide continues to grow. So how are we going to meet that growing demand with flat, if not less, resource in our agency? I think, frankly, from my perspective, when Michael took over as director of DAS, there was a part of me that says, oh my, run as fast as you can the other way. But it's been a breath of fresh air. And as we have practiced at shared leadership, I think we're getting better. Certainly the conversations that we have around the table now, 4 years later, are much, much different than those conversations we had when we first started meeting, when some of us really didn't even know each other that well. Certainly for me, being a natural resources agency, was well acquainted with my fellow natural resources agency directors, but I hadn't met the director of the Youth Authority, and I certainly didn't feel like I had much in common with the director of the Department of Corrections and the challenges that they deal with versus the challenges that I deal with on a day-to-day basis and how we make all of this work within state government. We have different conversations now, and I guess perhaps the best way to characterize it is in the past, we'd sit in our agencies and say, well, what is DAS going to do to us today? And now the conversation is, how do we come together and collectively decide how we're going to move forward together? And that is indeed a much different conversation. Are we where we need to be? No, I don't think so. And particularly in response to Senator Johnson's questions about, we seem to have these conversations over and over again. Yes, we do. And I don't think we will ever completely resolve them. I remember 25 to 30 years ago, we were having great debates in this building about how we fund K-12 education, and what are we talking about today? So some of those things will continue, but I hope that we can get smarter and better about how we do it. We're forced to do that. There are different directors that take leads on different projects. I'm the lead on the Oregon Management Project. Margaret's been a lead on other projects. And so, again, it is how are we collectively working together to do this in the best way possible? And we are exploring shared services models that are not necessarily enterprise-wide. In my building, we are co-located with Department of Land Conservation and Development, and we are sharing services that we haven't in the past. There are a core group of natural resources agencies that are exploring how they might share more services than we have in the past. And so there are a number of ways that we're looking at how we can be more efficient and try to demonstrate that we are eliminating waste in state government, although I have to be honest with you, I struggle to find that waste most of the time. I think, Mr. Chair, I'll leave it at that and let Margaret give a perspective from her tenure in state government, and then perhaps there's time for a few questions if you have some.
I was going to say, any questions of Director Koba?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, my name is Margaret Van Vliet. I'm the director at Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. I've been in my role just about 3 years, a little over 3 years. And so I don't have the kind of history that Katie has. And as I was thinking about speaking with you this afternoon, what came to mind for me was to reflect for you that there's really nothing that prepares a person to become a state agency head. It's unlike any other experience I've ever had. Having some subject matter expertise is helpful. Having some public management expertise is helpful. But state government really is a very different environment. And so while I don't have personal experience about what it would have been like before, I can tell you that my own sort of initiation into the process was very much helped by being at the enterprise leadership table. It helped me sort of understand the larger context in which my agency is doing its work. It helps me understand both sort of long-term policy direction and be able to articulate both for myself and for my employees how we fit in that broader context. It also helps me understand why it is that I still entered my timesheet on a blinking green screen, and why it is that the fleet systems operate the way they do, and that I actually get to help influence improving some of those things that really have long been needing improvement. So it's been very positive. I do have strong relationships, I would say, with most of the directors. They didn't know anything about my agency, and I certainly didn't know anything about theirs. But there is this sense of being on the same team and pulling in the same direction, which is, I think, invaluable. I'll share with you that I have been, since the beginning, a member of the Improving Government Steering Team. One of the things I have taken some leadership on with that group is the Procurement Improvement Project, which sounds mind-numbingly boring, but I'm actually very excited about it. And I appreciate being able to sort of provide executive leadership and executive sponsorship for a set of processes which I can absolutely see will pay dividends for all of us down the road. So. I will pause there and happy to answer questions.
We got Senator Johnson.
Not so much a question as a comment. I look at the two of you. I know you both very well. Ms. Koba, a seasoned, longtime administrator. Ms. Van Vliet brought in as a change agent. And a couple of things that you have said that resonate with me today, and that is apropos the conversation that I had with Mr. Jordan about institutionalizing change. I think the clarion call to the governor's office as well as to whoever administers DAS is to be supportive of the frontline agency people. For the benefit of our new folks, it has been my observation now watching this for almost 20 years, both as an agency head and as a legislator, is that often top-level management gets it. It's the guys right underneath that don't. And when, as is the case with Ms. Van Vliet, they're hired as change agents to get the kind of support that you need to do that in an environment that is constantly pushing back. And I can think of other agency heads right now who have been brought in some cases to drain the swamp. Mm-hmm. And it would be my fervent hope that they would get the kind of support that they need to discharge that mission without being come after either by the legislature, by employees, by other agency directors. And that whole business about nothing preparing folks to run a state agency, perhaps that's a clarion call for like management school, a little something that explains to state agency folks how you hire and fire state employees, which is like kabuki theater in some instances. Maybe, Mr. Jordan, there's value in doing boot camp for new managers, but I thank you ladies both for your service and your willingness as Ms. Van Vliet to come in and really contemplate for Representative Taylor and Representative Hurd, contemplate whether or not her agency should have gone away. Right. That was the charge. Come in here and look at housing and community development, decide whether or not there's value in this agency continuing to exist. That's the definition of change agent for me.
So, Mr. Chair, I might respond briefly. This is an area that I'm very passionate about, how we have trained or not train managers in state government, how we have treated managers in state government. Oftentimes, we promote the best technical person that we have into a management position, and that's not always the smartest thing to do. It's one of the reasons why I'm the chair of the Oregon Management Project, and we're spending, this is probably a five-year project with increments of check the box, we've done this piece of it. Just as an example, one of the things that we're starting to institute is director mentors for new directors, for the very reason that Margaret mentioned, you mentioned. I remember when I came in as director and I sat at my desk and I went, what do I do now? So it's some of these things that we're talking about, and we welcome suggestions. We honestly do, from your perspective.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you. Director Koba, you talked about the collaborative managers process and where agencies would actually talk to one another, mm-hmm. which, you know, was a great idea. So there's a couple of bills coming forward that would regarding juniper management, and this would shift the juniper forest management and policy from forestry to agriculture, and with all the things that go with it. That would also affect the Department of Forestry, DAS, DEQ, the Business Department, and NRCS. So could you walk us through how you would envision this collaborative process working?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Whitsitt, I think the first thing to point out on this issue is these agencies are all working together now mm-hmm. on this project. So the question really becomes what that is currently housed in forestry would be moved to agriculture. And I'm not familiar with the bill, so I haven't even looked at it yet. So that would be the first question that I would have. What would you expect us to do that forestry used to do, considering that there's really a team together mm-hmm. that's working on these issues? And is this really the best, you know, given the outcome that you're looking for, is this really the best structure to help us get there, or is there a better, different way? Mm-hmm. I think it would be really incumbent for all of us to come to the table with the sponsors of the bill and talk about, you know, what are the perceived things that aren't happening now that could be happening better, and what's being proposed in the bill really the best way to get there?
It's an LC draft. You didn't have a chance.
Directors, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate you coming before our committee.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Jordan, we have 3 minutes.
I think we're just going to jump to the audit slides and then close up.
Do you want to do that?
That's all right.
I want to make sure our committee has a chance to really...
And we can carry those over, and if you want to ask questions, we can do that too.
Let me turn to my committee. To me, that seems like an important area to not rush through. Is that all right if we hold that over? Madam Co-Chair, are you all right with that?
Absolutely.
Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. We can do that.
We'll pick that up tomorrow then.
Why don't we do that? If we could ask that if you'd wrap up today's work tomorrow and then take it from there.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I hope you got at least a flavor at the very highest level that this is not your grandfather's DAS. We're taking a very different approach to engagement with the entire enterprise. We really want to look at this organization more holistically. I think Director Koba's response to the question is indicative. Governor Roberts was fond of telling me when she was a counselor at Metro when I was there, she would say, you know, Mike, we've caught all the three-legged rabbits, meaning the ones we still have to chase down out there, the problems that still face us are really fast and really tough, and we're going to have to be really smart to run them down. And I think to a very great degree that is going to require this organization to view problem solving in a much more holistic way than we have before. We have hired professionals the way most other organizations have hired professionals in the post-World War II era. We hire specialists, and we expect them to do one thing and do it really well and produce widgets or whatever it happens to be. And to be quite honest, the problems we face now are multidisciplinary. They are multi-jurisdictional, and it's three-dimensional chess on steroids. And it's going to take a different way of doing business going forward. And again, that's an incremental thing. We're not going to flip a switch and change tomorrow. We've got a lot of work to do on this. But we really do face huge challenges as not just a state government, as government in Oregon. And it really is going to require a different engagement.
Share with me, Mr. Director. Yes. Several questions have been asked today that we're getting follow-up information on the assessments, et cetera.
Exactly.
Committee, what's the best way to handle this? Do we just want it sent to us individually? We can read it on our own. Do you want it brought forward to the committee for presentation? What's your take?
My thought, Mr. Chair, that what we did 2 years ago was effective. If they send it to Mr. Siebert, and maybe the two of us and Mr. Siebert can both put it in the OLIS, because then anybody listening online will also be able to find those answers in the documents for today's meeting, and then also send it out to members of the committee. That way you and I make sure that we pay attention to it quickly, and then also members of the committee get informed, and we keep the public engaged, which is very important to all of us.
So, Director, is that all right?
You bet.
Senator Johnson, I see you.
I guess I was just thinking and listening to your closing comments, Mr. Jordan, that I would hope that in the pursuit of some of the esoteric improvement processes, that you don't lose track of the core mission. How many buildings do we have? How many cars do we have? How are they being used? Who's abusing cell phone policy? Keeping the trains running is part of the whole program here, and while some of these loftier reach outs to find the newest, coolest way to do stuff, you still have a state to run.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, I'm painfully aware of that. we call it getting the beer out in my shop.
Getting the beer out or the bear out?
The beer. And the beer has to get out every day. The world doesn't stop while you're trying to change it. And so I'm acutely aware that we have to keep the place running, too, and make it run better. And I think that's what we're trying to do. So thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Tomorrow we'll talk about the service side of the organization and the next day, for the next 2 days, Mr. Chairman.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions in committee? Paul, anything we need to think about? No? Julie, anything? All right. We're going to adjourn for the day. Julie, anything? All right. We're going to adjourn.